Welcome to After Deadline here on Coast Community Radio. This is Patrick Webb from the Daily Astorian, and our guest today is a pleasure to welcome back Keith Clark from the Astoria Music Festival.
Well, so nice to be here, Patrick. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, absolutely. And we try to mix up the guests, but every year we like to have you on. And I know in previous years we've covered the, did you ever think it would grow this big? But you seem to have, I was looking at the schedule, you seem to have an astonishing array of things coming up this year.
This is one of the largest music festivals of classical music on the West Coast now. And no, we didn't think it was going to grow to this extent, but thanks to the support from all the people in Astoria, and things have grown topsy-turvy.
Well, we're going to get straight into talking about what's coming up, and we've got so much to cover. We won't be able to cover everything, so be sure to check out the website, which is AstoriaMusicFestival.org, and that has the full details. Now, we have 3 weekends and a lot of midweek events and activities, but the first session looks at the 200th anniversary of the birth of Wagner.
Yes, it's amazing that Astoria is actually older than Richard Wagner, the composer.
Another of our claims to fame.
And we are joining a worldwide celebration of the bicentennial of the birth of one of the greatest composers in all of music, and then we'll speak a bit later about the bicentennial of another great composer, Verdi. Both were born in the same year.
All right, so you had to commemorate them in the same music festival.
So our first weekend on the 15th of June, we will be doing for the first time in over 30 years music from the Ring. This is the first time in the state of Oregon in over 30 years. Music from his second opera of The Ring of the Nibelungen, Die Walküre, The Wolf of the Valkyrie. And we are doing the entire first act with three fabulous Metropolitan Opera singers.
Well, let's talk about that, because Wagner wrote the Ring cycle, and it's four operas. And as you mentioned, this one is the second. And for listeners who are starting to think, okay, which one's that? Let me give you a clue. Da 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 da. Was that even close? It certainly wasn't musical, I know. Why did you pick this one?
It's one of my favorite pieces. First, from a personal standpoint, it's one of my favorites. It is extremely intimate music. We think of Wagner as being this huge orchestra, big singers, long. And this particular movement, which is, a bit more than an hour, the length of a good-sized symphony, is extremely intimate, perfect music for the Liberty Theater. It only takes three singers and large orchestra, of course. And the music is, for my taste, some of the most beautiful music.
Well, now, the theme that I hummed rather badly,
unfortunately,
is actually in the second act.
Well,
we
would have to wait for the third act, actually, but we'll be hopefully addressing that in summers to come.
All right. Well, good. Well, now, the soloists I see, I'm probably going to mispronounce their names, but we have Alan Glassman from the Metropolitan Opera, Stacy
Rishoy
from Chicago Lyric, and you're going to have to help me with the San Francisco Opera gentleman.
That is Gustav Andresen.
All right. Okay.
So, who is a Norwegian-American singer, actually born in Oregon.
Well, he'll certainly fit in so many ways in Astoria. Yeah.
And from an interesting just a personal standpoint, he and Stacy Rishoy play in this opera a married couple, or at least a couple. Her name is Sieglinde, which means beautiful victory, and she is a very, very sweet person. And she is living with her husband, Hunding, which you can just tell by his name, which sort of means dog in German. it's a rather dysfunctional relationship, and interestingly enough, the two of them are married.
Oh, how fun.
In real life, and I am assured that their marriage is a happier one.
Oh, well, good. Well, they'll have to be good actors then. That's that's good. That's always fun when you have that that element of the personal sort of backstory, if you like. Okay. All right. Well, that is one of the key elements of... tell me, explain again with Wagner. There is a perception, and maybe it's not a fair one, that his music is sort of heavy and loud and things like that. But you've particularly chosen this one because it's it will offer a lighter sound.
Yes, and it, over the last 100 years or so, the concept of Wagner has changed from what he had originally intended. Last year, we did Bellini's Norma, which is one of the great Italian operas, and that was Wagner's favorite opera. Everyone thinks of Wagner as being this heavy Teutonic German composer, but in reality he loved this lighter, very lyric and beautiful Italian style of singing. That's what he intended, and he designed a theater specifically to allow that style of singing. The orchestra is under the stage in his theater in Bayreuth, Germany. So the orchestra is very subdued, which allows for the singers to sing very intimately and have a very close relationship with the audience, which we are able to do in the Liberty Theater. We have a beautiful small theater. And this music is extremely lyric, Italian-oriented, not at all the misconception of dum-da-da-dum-dum. There is that, too. But not as much as we think.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Now, let me branch off, talk about the Liberty Theatre, because I'm very impressed with the sound in there. How does it compare to some of the other places that you play all over the world when you're conducting?
It's a typical, smaller European opera house. We think of, in this country, our opera houses are huge. The Metropolitan Opera's 4,300 seats or something, and others are similarly large. But in Europe, where opera was born, the theaters, the buildings themselves are massive, but the theaters within those buildings are extremely small, compact. They may have a large seating capacity because they have many balconies, but everyone is very close to the stage. The singers can communicate to individuals rather than looking out and seeing 4,000 faces. And it's a different experience. We can emulate that experience in the Liberty Theater. It's very beautiful acoustics that enhances the music, and everyone is so close to the stage that you actually see human beings performing.
Well, good. Well, now, we mentioned Alan Glassman from the Metropolitan Opera, and the second weekend of the music festival, which is June the 22nd, he returns in a Verdi bicentennial. Now, by an odd coincidence of timing, it's also the bicentennial of Verdi's birth, and you're doing some highlights from his opera Otello.
Yes, Otello was probably Verdi's masterpiece. Verdi, as Wagner, revolutionized music in the 19th century. Both are the height of romantic music. And Otello, it's interesting, as Verdi matured, and by this time he was quite late in his life, he was in his 70s, I believe, had been a bit influenced by Wagner, in that the music has some very... interesting ways in which he intertwines music themes, tunes, that have meanings themselves. So even without words, he can tell stories with just the music itself. He took Shakespeare's Othello and wrote this magnificent dramatic opera, Otello in Italian. And it tells the story of Otello the Moor being confused by an underling, Cassio, who tells him lies about that his wife is cheating on him. And, of course, he ends up killing her in a good Italian opera way. There's a lot of drama and death at the end.
Okay.
But in the midst, there's unbelievably beautiful music.
Okay, so we need to mention to the Liberty staff they'll be cleaning up the blood at the end of the third.
Now, we can't really kill his wife, Desdemona in English, Desdemona in the Italian, because she is one of the greatest sopranos alive, so we do have to let her survive this performance.
And this, of course, we're talking about Ruth Ann Swenson, who's going to take the
Ruth Ann Swenson
part.
This is a remarkable opportunity for the West Coast to hear one of the finest American sopranos who graced the stages of the Metropolitan Opera and all the great opera houses of the world. And Alan Glassman from the Metropolitan Opera was called by the New York Times the Otello of our age.
Oh, my goodness.
So this will be a very special chance to hear some remarkable singers who don't get to the West Coast very often.
Well, it'll certainly be a treat. That's something to put on your calendar for June the 22nd at the Liberty Theater. And the bad guy, the other bad guy, Iago, is going to be played by Richard Zeller, who, of course, is familiar to audiences at the Liberty Theater, the music festival.
Well, we're very fortunate that Richard Zeller, who lives in Oregon, is also one of the great baritones, and Cassio is the one who is used by Otello, by Iago. Iago wants to get his revenge for being passed over for a job, actually. So he is the one who uses poor little Cassio to plant the seeds of suspicion and jealousy in Otello. But you are right. Iago is the embodiment of evil.
It's certainly one of the nastier roles. I certainly know the Shakespearean version. It's the tragedy that I know the least in Shakespeare, but I do know that Iago is one of the longest roles in the canon, and I do know Branagh did a good job in one of the film versions. I'm noticing that the same weekend you have Dvorak's New World Symphony, and
yes.
That'll be familiar to music lovers. Dvorak doesn't seem to get much ink for his first eight symphonies, but this one's a very popular one.
Of course, this is one that everyone will recognize, and we have such a wonderful orchestra this year. It really looking forward to performing this.
Well, good, and you'll be missing me as the cymbal player. In high school, I did a little percussion work, and the New World Symphony has one cymbal crash in the fourth movement, and I had to sit there in seventh grade and hope that I didn't drop the cymbals, and then the conductor would nod, and I would hit the cymbals, and that would be done. And my mother and father basically came to see me and said, "Is that all?" So I am a great fan of Dvorak. So, all right, well, you are listening to After Deadline here on Coast Community Radio. This is Patrick Webb from the Daily Astorian, and our guest today, Keith Clark, the maestro from the Astorian Music Festival. And do you ever get tired of doing this?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not a job. It's a love.
It's a good deal. All right. Well, now we're going to move into a little controversial deal. And 100 years ago this year, there was a riot in Paris. And this was caused by Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. Now, a lot of folks may know the backstory, but why was there a riot when The Rite of Spring was premiered in 1913?
Well, to most ears in 1913, this was extremely unusual heavy metal music. That those that had come, it's a ballet, those that had come to the ballet expecting to see dying swans and sugar plum fairies were quite shocked by a very brutal story and music. It's very Russian folk oriented. It's a Russian folk story, and the music is primitive in capturing the power of this folk ritual. It was just not something that many people in the audience had anticipated. They heard many sounds that even today are unusual to most ears. it changed the course of music. In retrospect, as we look back on it, it's very much part of a tradition, of a style of Russian music that was trying to avoid sounding like, well, Dvorak. It wasn't all that long ago that Dvorak and Brahms and all of these Germanic-oriented composers were writing their symphonies. Russian composers wanted to be different. They wanted to be nationalistic. They wanted to express their own personalities. And some of them actually went to the extent of not studying music. They wanted to be composers, but they felt if I went to music school and learned how to be a composer, I would just sound like Brahms and Dvorak. So I'm just going to write music without having ever studied it.
Oh, this, and, could be hope for me yet, folks.
And Stravinsky was not one of those. He was a highly skilled, highly trained composer, but he was in that tradition of wanting to do something new and do music that sounded not like the rest of Western Europe, that sounded like Central Asia or the steppes of Siberia or these distant and exotic places. And the Rite of Spring is embodies that attempt to be extremely different. It is different, and it was different in that time, and there's nothing better for public relations than a riot. So whether or not that riot was really as big a deal as we think it is now, it certainly put this piece on the map.
Well, a case of all publicity is good publicity. Well, now, of course, it's a ballet, and I see the Lasker dancers from Portland will be performing with the Maddox Dance Studio Little Ballet. And that should be quite a treat. That's Saturday, June the 29th, which is the closing weekend of the music festival. Well, you certainly have a tremendous offering. Those are three of the highlights: the Wagner, the Verdi Otello, and the Rite of Spring. But you also have some of the favorites coming back, and one of them is cellist Sergei Antonov, who basically the music community here has basically fallen in love with him, haven't they?
As well they should. He is a matinee idol in the best sense. They're a more handsome, tall Russian doesn't exist in the movies. But the important thing is he is also one of the great cello soloists of our time. And we, fortunately, he came into our orbit a few years ago, when he gave his first American performances with us after he had won the Tchaikovsky competition in Moscow, which is the biggest music competition in the world. His teacher was an old friend of mine, and I happened to ask his teacher if he would like to come and be a soloist and be part of our music festival. And he said, well, I'm unfortunately suffering from arthritis now, not doing too much public performing, but if you really want to get in on the ground floor, my student is, you won't believe this fellow. And so he came, and he was right. He's been a major part of our program ever since.
Well, he certainly is an audience favorite, and I have particularly watched with interest the way he seems to coordinate well with you and the orchestra. And one of the things I like about him is that there's sort of usually at the end of his performances, there's sort of a huge applause. And the first thing he does in acknowledging the applause is acknowledge you and the orchestra.
Very generous. Very generous young man.
I guess
he will
like
be with
that.
Us as in many personalities. We'll see him as a soloist, as a concerto soloist with the orchestra, as a chamber musician. He'll be with us for almost 3 weeks.
Well, we'll certainly look forward to that. Rather than detailing that on the radio right now, you can look at the AstoriaMusicFestival.org and see the program, which includes From Russia with Cello, which I kind of like. And I see Roy Milan is coming from San Francisco. He's, I could call him a fiddle player, but he's a violinist. He's added quite a lot of quality to our music festival over the years.
Yes, very much. He comes to us from the San Francisco. I knew him years ago when he was one of the principal players of the San Francisco Symphony. Now he's the concertmaster of the San Francisco Ballet and Opera, and brings a lifetime of experience in orchestra leadership. He will be sharing the responsibilities of concertmaster with a newcomer to Oregon, Sarah Kwok, who has just become the concertmaster of the Oregon Symphony. Between the two of them, we have in that first chair of the first violin section, which is so important to building our team, we couldn't have stronger team captains.
Well, good. Well, that'll be something to look forward to, and I'm glad that you pronounced the lady's name before I mangled it, because it looked like she did need to buy a vowel. Just a quick personal thing, I just can't resist. Roy Milan studied with Yehudi Menuhin, yes, who lived in the next village to where I grew up in Surrey, England. So that's my claim to fame. I'm pathetic, really, that I cling on to these little musical connections.
But these connections are important, that it passes down a tradition, that Menuhin had studied with another great violinist who had known Brahms, actually. So there's a direct lineage, and it's a great part of what we do, is that we are dealing with music, much of which was written long ago. And what our job is to try and interpret the way that music was intended to be performed years ago. And the best way to do that is through this passing down through the generations the tradition of music. So Roy, who studied with Yehudi Menuhin, Roy is now teaching younger players who are with us in the orchestra. And Yehudi Menuhin studied with another great violinist who, of course, studied with him, and it just went back hundreds of years.
Well, goodness, what a connection. Well, now, as we start to wrap up, there is a sort of bonus event that we want to tell listeners about. And I believe this is happening on Mother's Day. And Keith, can you do us the honors and tell us a little about this event that's coming up?
Yes, on Mother's Day, just a couple of days' time, we're having a preview, introduction to the music festival, an appetizer, if you will, that's going to be very special. It is featuring one of those young musicians who has absorbed the tradition in a remarkable way, and her name is Ruta Kuzmikas. She, although she is, I think she's 17, she is already a national figure. She lives in Portland, and is destined to become one of the great solo pianists of her generation. She's going to be playing an afternoon of Chopin, which is a more fitting music for Mother's Day, doesn't exist. But the interesting thing is that she will be surrounded by ballet dancers who will be interpreting this beautiful music of Chopin with very classical ballet, with the Agnieszka Laska dancers, who will be back with us during the music festival. And it's a very special afternoon. We are, all the mothers will get a rose. Everyone will get some Polish sweets afterwards in celebration of the Polish tradition of Chopin and of Agnieszka Laska, who was one of the solo dancers of the Polish National Ballet. And we have very, very special ticket prices for young people, families. We want people to come and enjoy this. And it's a great way to treat your mom to something special.
Outstanding. All right. Well, now as we wrap up, tell me about the rewards. I've asked you this before, but I always like to hear you put it into words. What is the reward for you? I mean, you're a gentleman, as you've told me, coming into your prime as a conductor in your mid-60s. What's the reward of bringing music, live music, to folks out here in Astoria?
Well, I know how much music has meant to my life, and the enriching qualities, how it has brought joy, knowledge, I suppose you'd say. And I just think it's important to bring that, share that with other people. I haven't been in Oregon all that long, but one of my first experiences was coming to Astoria. And of course, when I turned or made that bend coming on 30 and saw the estuary and the ships in the beautiful old Victorian city, I was immediately struck by this. It's such a unique setting. And I had come out to do a concert with a young people's orchestra, a university student orchestra, in the Liberty Theater. This was back before the Liberty Theater had been restored. So on the inside, it didn't look very good. It certainly didn't smell very good. But it sounded fantastic. And for my world, the world of sound, the acoustic of a building is the most important thing. And I saw the potential of that. I had been asked to come out to do this concert by Steve Forrester, by Marge Bloomfield, and Hal Snow were beginning the effort to restore, save, preserve the Liberty Theater. And this concert was part of that effort. It featured the remarkable young kid from Astoria, Karsten Gimry, who was another one of these young virtuosi who just, where does that talent come from? It's inexplicable. And it was such a day. I remember seeing how beautiful it was, meeting so many nice people, and hearing the acoustic in the Liberty Theater, an acoustic that I'm used to in these European halls. I just said, I want to be part of this. We're going to start a music festival. And a small team of us got together and started it, and here we are.
And as they say, the rest is history. All right. Well, Patrick Webb from the Daily Astorian talking with Keith Clark, the Astorian Music Festival Artistic Director. And put the dates on your calendar. They're coming up. It all starts June the 13th, the first weekend. That will include a bunch of stuff. That's the technical term, a bunch, which include the Wagner piece on Saturday the 15th. There'll be some midweek music, and then the second weekend features the Verdi Otello and a whole bunch of other stuff, including Sergei Antonov. And and then the third weekend, the Rite of Spring. And I was remembering that's one of the pieces I particularly like.
And we shouldn't overlook probably one of the most exciting and a new idea and something new for our music festival, our very first performance on the 14th, Friday the 14th of June. We have all of the major groups from Astoria. It's Astoria on stage, the North Coast Chorale, the North Coast Symphonic Band, soloists, Fisher Poets, and we're celebrating all of the local talent to launch our festival.
Outstanding. Well, you can find details on the website AstoriaMusicFestival.org. We'll be promoting this in Coast Weekend magazine, in the Daily Astorian, and of course on KMUN and sister stations here at Coast Community Radio. All that remains is me to thank Keith Clark for coming today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for all your efforts to bring music to the greater Astoria area. Thank you.
It's our joy.